And welcome back. There is an unusual art exhibit now showing at the Sheldon. It's the work of artist and filmmaker Jill Evans Petzl. It is billed as an interactive audio-video experience exploring stereotypes and travel photography. It's titled Still Lives with Stories. Jill Evans Petzl joins us in studio to talk about her work. No, so nice to see you.
It's so nice to see you, too.
This is really something very, very different. Tell us about the structure of this exhibit at the Sheldon.
Oh, the structure of the exhibit is rather complex. It's got a lot of different moving parts. It's an interactive installation, which means that I am hoping for and relying on audience participation to become a part of the art itself. I'm providing photographs, and I've provided 57 photographs that I shot in 7 countries throughout Southeast Asia. These photographs have revolve around 2 different themes that relate to each other. One theme is tourist shots. In other words, when I got to Southeast Asia, I found the only landscape I could locate was a landscape of tourists. And so I began to get fascinated with what the tourists were shooting, why they were shooting it, how briefly they stayed, where they were shooting. They shot themselves, been there, done that, move on. I got fascinated with how they posed, and I got very, very intrigued with how their poses seemed so uniform to one another. Everybody smiled with a fairly fake smile, a fairly scripted pose. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, throughout all of Southeast Asia, as I was walking down streets, I was also noticing the storefront mannequins. And in 7 countries in Southeast Asia, all the storefront mannequins had nothing but Caucasian features. And to me, I felt as if a lot of the tourist poses were almost scripted by the anglicized poses of the mannequins, and everyone was turning themselves into a still life.
And, you know, some are quite remarkable. I mean, those that I've seen, I haven't seen all 57 of them, but of people, they look like natives, the indigenous people, taking pictures of orange juice, for instance, on a table, or taking pictures of food on a table. These are not pieces of art. They're snapshots, really, aren't they?
Yes and no. Yeah. I mean them to feel like snapshots, but they are very carefully composed. And in so many of them, not the one that you referred to of the young man taking a shot of orange juice and how many people take shots of their food. He's meant to represent the kind of snapshot work that photography that everybody feels so attracted to with their iPhones these days. But most of my images really involve layers of reflections in storefront windows.
How about the audio portion of it? We're going to hear a couple of the comments that people made. You have asked people to comment on what they see and what their interpretation of it is. Is that the idea?
I am asking them to interpret because I do believe that while old saying is a picture is worth 1,000 words, I think a picture is worth 1,000 stories. I don't think anyone can see a picture without attaching words to it. Mm-hmm. Right now, if you took out your cell phone and you wanted to show me a picture of your family, you couldn't be silent. You would need to narrate it for me. You would need to tell me who, what, where, when, why. And everyone has a different story about a picture. And those stories are what give the picture meanings. Pictures don't have meanings inherently. They need the words in order for us to know what they're about.
So at the Sheldon, people can go to the exhibit and wander through with earbuds in and listen to the comments. Made by whom? Who are the people who are commenting?
Well, so far I've interviewed about 80 people. Uh-huh. People have come to my studio and recorded stories after they've seen the show, or even I did some preview interviews. And they came and they saw bits of the images, or all of the images, and then they selected images and recorded stories. And if they were appropriate, I curated them. Mm-hmm. I edited them. So if someone coughed or if someone cleared their throat or even said something that they wanted to take back, I could edit that out. And so the stories typically run between 10 seconds and a minute and a half.
Yeah. Well, let's listen to a couple of them. This is radio, of course, so we can't show the picture, but we can describe it. Let's do this one first, the one of the mannequin with no eyes and no brain, it appears.
Absolutely. It is a very golden picture. It's a picture of a mannequin who lacks arms, who lacks the top of her head, who lacks eyes. She is painted gold. However, her bone structure, her facial features are all very Anglo in this Asian country. This was taken in Thailand. And reflected in the windows are buildings from across the street, and that bears on some of the stories we're going to hear. One of the important dimensions that I want to emphasize for this show is that everybody tells a different story, and the contrast and the contexts are really what make the pictures live.
Okay, well, let's give a listen to that. This is the one from Thailand, as you have mentioned, and it would be Lee, I think, is the one that we want to take first. If you folks in the control room can, let's listen to it.
It almost looks like a mystery to me. I can't really tell the expression that the mannequin has. Initially, I thought she was helpless because, you know, she's a mannequin and she can't see. But it almost feels like she's a goddess and that she's guarding this town made out of clothes.
I guess it's impossible to see any of these things and not have some impression like that.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And if anybody right now wants to see this image, I also have a companion website. You can bring up www.stilliveswithstories.com, go to Still Life number 2, and that's the image we're talking about. And the audio stories are all also on this website.
Yeah, it's a very nicely done website, by the way. We will put a link to it on our website, stopublicradio.org, so folks can get to it that way as well. Let's listen to another one now. It's the same image.
It's the same golden lady,
mannequin with no eyes and no upper part of her head. Right?
And one other thing to add as you're imagining this image is that reflected in the windows is a cityscape from across the street.
And this is the way it was observed by, this would be Ole.
So this golden girl without eyes nor brain cannot see the reality across the street as reflected in the window, of very poor housing situations where people don't have glass but steel bars in their windows. And yeah, it shows very much the big difference between the ideal and the reality, I think.
Jill, this is really quite remarkable because the frame is so dominated by this golden image that he was observant enough to look into the background reflection and see those buildings across the street.
That's part of the joy for me of hearing people's stories and interpretations. I think the stories talk about what's both visible and what's invisible. Mm-hmm. And part of what's invisible are the social dynamics that surround these subjects.
You also show that two people can look at the same photo and see things that are quite different. I mean, I guess we're all guilty of that, Well, I guess it's very natural as well.
It's very natural as well, but somehow we tend to think that an image is telling us how to think about it. And I want to reverse that assumption, if possible, because we are telling ourselves how we think about images. And if we really think about the stories we tell ourselves, we can learn a lot about ourselves as well.
Mm-hmm. What brought you to this project? What's the genesis of it?
The genesis of it is, I think, what has run through the work that I've done over the past 30 years, which is matters of justice and matters of injustice. And part of what disturbed me in this and also part of what launched my ideas in the direction of talking about how in Southeast Asia all these storefront mannequins are anglicized, and so the injustice there, I think, is that cultures other than white Anglo cultures are losing a status, and white Anglo cultures are being so privileged around the world.
Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
Oh, just that we both see it and we don't see it unless we look for it.
Do we know why that they're using the Anglo images to such degree?
Well, one has to guess that, first of all, it's selling clothes. Mm-hmm. So the commercial angle is really probably a reassuring angle to the people who put the mannequins in the storefront windows. But I think it really is promoting a norm, a beauty norm, a way of life norm, that the good life really depends upon looking a certain way and dressing a certain way. And it then therefore demotes other ways of life that may have much more value than we are aware of.
There's an irony to this, it seems to me, too, because many of the clothes that we wear are made in this part of the world and then shipped over to us.
That's a great point.
Yeah.
That's a great point. Come and tell a story.
One of these days, you're going to be running through January 20th.
January 20th. Yeah.
Let's hear some comments on another picture, which I find most interesting. You want to describe it? It's the tourist who is taking a picture kind of in the background.
So for anybody who's been to Cambodia and visited Siem Reap, this is shot in Cambodia, in Siem Reap. It is an American white male tourist with a big heavy backpack on his back. He's got a camera to his face. His back is to us to some extent, and he's shooting an empty space. He's shooting a pedestal that's empty, and he's shooting into an empty doorway. And in the foreground of the picture is an ancient stone Asian god who has been draped in a gold sari, and that god has his eyes closed as if in despair against the fact that, well, there have been lots of stories told about as if in the fact that. So you want to hear some?
Well, let's hear some impressions of this photo.
This man is so out of place. I wonder what he thinks he's taking a picture of. Does he have any understanding of what's around him? But just because he's out of place doesn't mean that he shouldn't be there.
All right. Interesting impression there. He is so out of place. I love that.
He is so out of place. Yeah. He looks out of place. He looks like he's been dropped in from a time warp. And yet, the story, who's told by a woman named Talia, really caps, I think, the meaning that was at least in my head when I shot it, which is, even though he's out of place, if one is out of place, it doesn't mean they don't belong. It's all about belonging.
Let's listen to one more. Time's getting away, and we'll get the second one from the same photograph we've just described.
Just appreciate where you are. This building is older than you, older than probably the oldest family member you know. And rather than walking around and taking in the sheer majesty of it, you're looking at it through a lens. I can't even bear to look at you doing that. I have to turn away, close my eyes, rather than watch you ignore the place that you're in, watch you rather view it through the lens of a camera than through your own eyes.
This is really an interesting technique. I mean, you can really get into it. I love the idea of what you're doing here. What sort of response have you had so far?
I've had a wonderful response. People who have gone there and then have come and recorded have started out by saying, well, I don't have anything to say. And then 20 images later, they say, can I come back and tell my stories?
Yeah. You have mentioned in something that I've read that you're really interested in getting kids to the exhibit, particularly over the holidays when they'll have the time to do that. In 30 seconds, why would this whole project and this whole technique be important to very young people?
I think it's especially important to young people because Young people don't know a world without cameras. Young people don't know a world without iPhones. Young people don't know a world that they live in without documenting it with a camera. And I want to suggest that you can be more present without the camera than with it.
That's a great project. Jill Evans-Petzold, thank you so much. The exhibit, Still Lives with Stories, showing at the Sheldon through January 20th. It's really quite neat. And again, you can get a taste of it on our website at stopublicradio.org. Thank you. Thank you so much. Archive versions of past St. Louis On the Air programs available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org/stlonair. St. Louis On the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thank you for listening. I'm Don Marsh.